It's time for your KDNK local newscast for this Monday morning, September 26th. I'm Gavin Dahl. Colorado's among a handful of states where voters will decide if the minimum wage should be increased. If approved, Colorado's wage would go up each year until it reaches $12 an hour by 2020. Proponents say it's crucial for many families, but as Benta Berkland reports, the ballot initiative is dividing the business community.
Lori Laddick is a home health care worker in Lakewood. She currently earns $13 an hour and says if it wasn't for her Social Security benefits, she wouldn't be able to make it on her own.
I would have ended up just moving and having to move in with my family. And at 62 years old, that's kind of humiliating. They would have welcomed me with open arms, but this is not how I pictured my life. At this point,
Laddick earns more than most home health care workers and well above the state's current minimum wage of $8.31 an hour. Opponents of Amendment 70 say raising the minimum wage will lead restaurants and other businesses to lay off employees. But supporters say not so fast.
There's plenty of room to raise wages. This is a modest increase.
Felicia Griffin is with the group Colorado Families for a Fair Wage.
There are a lot of have-nots that are struggling in our communities all over the state. Folks are working full-time and should be able to meet their basic needs.
But according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, Washington, D.C. lost 1,400 restaurant jobs when the minimum wage was raised last year. Sonia Riggs is president of the Colorado Restaurant Association.
Minimum wage is not meant to support a family of four. It never was. It's intended as a starting wage for you to get your foot in the door, learn valuable skills, and be able to work your way up. And those are exactly the kind of jobs that are going to be cut.
The Restaurant Association surveyed its 4,000 members, and Riggs says 80% oppose the amendment, but she says restaurant owners are reluctant to speak out against it.
Individual businesses, they're worried that they're going to be, you know, retaliated against, or people are going to say that they don't like people, and that couldn't be farther from the truth. They're painted as somebody who's literally rolling around in money, who's saying, I'm going to keep all this money and I want to push down workers, and that's absolutely not true. These are hardworking people who love the people that they work with.
Emotionally, we all support raising wages. It is rationally thinking what will actually happen here. We're saying help low-wage workers, but don't do it in a way that harms them.
That's Tyler Sandberg of the Keep Colorado Working campaign during a recent debate hosted by Colorado Public Television. He says the current proposal is flawed for many reasons, including that it's one size fits all, has no off-ramps if the economy dips, and is the same rate for both rural and urban areas. But there are businesses that back the effort. Kyle Garner is the CEO of Organic India USA. The Boulder-based company sells organic tea and herbal supplements to stores such as Sprouts, Whole Foods, and Vitamin Cottage.
There's a lot of people looking and saying business can be a force for good, and wage is one of the first steps in that journey.
Which is why he already pays above the minimum. Warehouse jobs, for example, start at $14 an hour. Garner says he'd ideally like to see the minimum wage start at $15 an hour. And he says paying higher wages has actually helped his business.
We keep costs down in terms of training new employees because we have lower turnover. The cost of replacing employees every few months, burning through workers, not only is it bad for the culture of your organization, it's a huge cost impact. We also have more productive workers because they're happier.
Colorado's Amendment 70 is also supported by the Obama administration. Labor Secretary Tom Perez was recently in the state campaigning for it.
Good businesses know how to adjust. Change is a constant in our industry.
For Lori Laddick, she says she'll vote for the measure, even though the increase would be below her current salary. She says it could still benefit her if she ever switched jobs.
If I wanted to change jobs and I had to, you know, step down to 12 to have a better working environment or to have some other benefit, like maybe a company that was offering some earned paid time off or some earned sick leave, it would be worth it.
A recent Colorado Mesa University and Rocky Mountain PBS poll showed that 58% of Coloradans surveyed either strongly or somewhat favored increasing the minimum wage. It included calling cell phones and was pretty evenly split among registered Republican, Democrat, and independent voters. I'm Benta Berkland at the state capitol.
Colorado's third congressional district spans from Craig to Grand Junction from Durango to Pueblo. It includes resort communities such as Aspen and Telluride, plus working class towns like Rifle and Newcastle. In this year's election, Republican incumbent Scott Tipton of Cortez faces former State Senator Gail Schwartz, a Democrat from Crested Butte, for the chance to represent us in Washington, D.C. Earlier this month, a group of western Colorado counties known as Club 20 hosted a debate in Grand Junction between the two candidates. In this clip, they talk immigration. The audio begins with the moderator framing the issue.
The 3rd Congressional District is home to much of Colorado's food production. Many producers rely on immigrant workers to plant and harvest crops and attend to livestock. And they require these workers during specific stages of production. The H-2A program is broken and has failed these producers time and again. How will you work to fix this problem and find a practical solution to have these workers arrive when needed? Do you support the immigration reform?
Gail?
Absolutely. And it's about time something gets done when it comes to immigration. We have a remarkable workforce living among us in the shadows. We just passed signs today driving through Delta County asking for laborers in Spanish to come help pick the peaches and the apples in our fruit basket. We need to make sure that we are starting to go down a path, securing our borders, but also taking people out of the shadows, making them more constructive members of our workforce, because we know there are industries, including agriculture, that are desperate for the help and support of these individuals. H-2A visa, absolutely. Let's make it work. Let's bring in, on a very secure, timely basis, a workforce that can fill the jobs that we know are not going to be filled with the American workforce. I'm very proud of my neighbors that live in throughout the 3rd Congressional that have not been had the opportunity to live here securely and safely. It's a fault of our Congress not to have addressed this and taken this challenge on. These young people are dreamers. Those are our valedictorians. Those are our future. Their families need to be stabled. We need to make sure that they're not afraid to call the police in the instance of domestic violence. Immigration is absolutely a top issue. We need to find a path to citizenship and make those people legal within our nation and continue to contribute as legal members of our society.
No matter where you're at on immigration, it's broken. Nothing is probably more visible than the H-2A program. Visited with John Harrell down with Olathe Sweet Sweet Corn, needing to be able to get workers actually into the field. Visited with Raftopoulos's up in Moffat County, trying to be able to get in Peruvian sheep herders that they've worked with for years and are having a hard time getting them through the process to actually be able to get in and get people to work. In the construction industry, in our hospitality industry, in the agricultural industry, we have a challenge in terms of that workforce. We've continued, as you're probably well aware, to advocate from our office for a step-by-step program to actually fix this. We need to fix the immigration system in this country and make sure that it is working for not only American businesses, but for the individuals and their families as well.
We had an opportunity over this past several years to support a president who is willing to step up with his authority and create a solution to this problem. But the broken Congress that continues to stay broken because there are people that are invested in that broken system, that is not what's going to take place during the next administration and during the next Congress, where we have individuals that are willing to go up there in a bipartisan way, reach across the aisle, not vote no, and get some problems solved for all of the 11 million people that are unfortunately living in our nation without the security of their family.
Katie and Kay will bring you more from the debate as we approach Election Day. Town of Carbondale Finance Director Renee Gustine sent out a weekly email update on behalf of Town Manager Jay Harrington on Friday. She reports that the town arborist gave out notices and talked with East Bank Point and Indica Way homeowners about trimming and cutting down elm trees along East Bank Point. The town is concerned elm trees will disrupt asphalt and start heaving curbs. The linden tree in front of the poor house was sprayed with neem oil because of an aphid infestation. They're hoping to stop the pests. AXA will be the new retirement company for the town of Carbondale's employee retirement plans. Employees met with company representatives last week. Earlier this month, AXA was found not guilty in federal court of receiving excessive compensation for managing and administering its mutual funds while delegating services to sub-advisors. Potato Day is the longest-running annual community event in Carbondale. Since 1909, local farming and ranching families have kept the tradition alive. Events include a parade, barbecue, live music, farm market, and kids' activities in Soper's Park in downtown Carbondale. The Carbondale Rec Department will operate a bounce house in Soper's Park from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. KD&K will host our annual record sale with vinyl, CDs, and stereo equipment from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. next to the stage in Soper's Park. That's this Saturday, October 1st. Join us, won't you? New documents show fossil fuel companies met with state attorneys general before they petitioned a federal judge to block the Obama administration's signature climate initiative. Eric Galatis reports.
Fossil fuel companies Murray Energy and Southern Company paid for private meetings with Republican state attorneys general to discuss opposition to the EPA's Clean Power Plan less than 2 weeks before the same officials asked a federal judge to block the measure, according to documents obtained by the Center for Media and Democracy. Nick Sergey with the Center says the meetings took place at a Republican Attorneys General Association, or RAGA, summit, where companies can pay higher conference fees in exchange for closed-door meetings.
Though that might not be quid pro quo, it's certainly concerning for our highest law enforcement officers to be essentially party to selling access in return for money that's going to help keep them in office.
Sergey says most of the money raised by RAGA, much like its Democratic Party counterpart DAGA, is used to buy advertising to support attorney general election campaigns. Murray Energy told Bloomberg the meeting was a useful strategy session on blocking the EPA's plan, but maintained the AGs acted on their own. Southern Company did not respond to requests for comments. Sergey argues the documents, some labeled confidential, reveal a coordinated effort between GOP attorneys general and industry to undermine the Obama administration's signature climate initiative to reduce pollution from existing coal-fired power plants.
Unless you got hold of these public records requests, you would never have any clue as to what was happening at these meetings, where elected officials are meeting with corporate representatives, and it seems like that's crucial information that we should know about.
Energy companies and 26 state attorneys general have joined a suit against the EPA to block implementation and ultimately reject the Clean Power Plan. A federal appeals court is expected to hear oral arguments in the case later this month. This is Eric Galatis reporting for KDNK.